of a group which is a SU2 group.
As the simplest example of non-abelian symmetries, but that's an important one because the SU2 group is, of course, at the basis of the one of the elements of the standard model. And in addition, the original proposal for non-abelian gauge series by Young and Mills in, I think, 54, something like that, was to build a theory of strong interaction based on the group SU2. Okay, so theory was, the physical theory was wrong, but the mathematical idea was a very good one. So, okay, so I remember that the SU2 group has is a group of matrix 2x2 matrices, complex matrices, G, which is unitary, and the determinant is 1. Okay, so it's a 3-dimensional real group, if you count the number of real independent components from the group. And in particular, it has a Lie algebra. So this is a group. And the group has a Lie algebra. Which I'm going to try to write as some little, more or less, Germanic G, which is, or little s, little u of u, which is a group of infinitesimal, well, the algebra of infinitesimal generator of G. So basically, any element G can be written as exponential of I alpha, where alpha is a traceless anti-Hermitian matrix, as you have seen in your group three course, if I'm not mistaken. And so in particular, we can represent, so this means that in fact it's the identity plus I alpha plus minus 1/2 of alpha squared, etc. So this is an infinitesimal generator. And for the SU2 group, those generators, you can take a basis, which is the basis of the Pauli matrices. So you can write any alpha. You can take a TA to be a basis of elements of basis G, and write any element alpha as alpha A TA with sum over the indices. So the alpha A are real component numbers. They are the component of the element of the algebra in the basis T. And in addition, if you want to write an element G and you want to write a commutator, so if you have 2G, which is G equal 1 plus I alpha and H equal 1 plus I beta, G H G minus 1 H minus 1 is 1 minus alpha beta, where this is a Lie bracket, which obeys the usual definition, and for, and you know the properties of the Lie bracket by just writing the component of its, the bracket, Lie bracket of its generators, which defines the structure constant. The algebra. So that's the general definition. It's not restricted to SU2. But for SU2, of course, for the algebra SU of 2, a well-known basis of the algebra are, you can take TA equal 1/2 of sigma A where sigma A are the three poly matrices. So sigma X is 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0. Sigma Y is 0 minus I, I 0. Sigma Z is 1, 0, 0, minus 1. And in my notation, this is sigma 1, sigma 2, and sigma 3. Okay? And in this case, the structure constant in this basis is simply the antisymmetric tensor epsilon ABC, which is plus or minus 1 depending on the signature of the permutation, and 0 otherwise. And the Lie bracket alpha beta is just the ordinary anticommutator. Commutator, I'm sorry, of course. I'm not dealing with the super algebra. Commutator, ordinary commutator. Okay. Okay. So, this is the basis that we're going to use. So now we have seen that if I consider a QFT with a global SU2 symmetry, then SU2 has three generators, three polymatrices, so we expect to have three currents. Three kinds of charge, labeled by the three generators. So let's call G mu A. A, 1, 2, 3. Okay, and I gave you two examples of, well, I gave you one example of theory, which is just a theory where you have a scalar, I mean, spin zero field in the fundamental representation. Representation. So, namely, I have a field that I'm calling, denoting phi, but it's a vector. It contains two components, phi 1 and phi 2. So, this I are indices. So it's phi I, let's say, with I equal 1, 2. So these indices are indices of, are group indices of the fundamental representation, which is of dimension 2, because it's a group. And so, group indices of the fundamental representation. And if each of these fields is itself a complex field, phi I, it's a complex field, because each of these fields carry charges. So in fact, you have four real independent fields, which means that in fact, you have this theory represent four kinds of different particles, one for one and one for two. But each particle is charged, so it's not its antiparticle. So you have one particle, its antiparticle with some, if you want, group index, one or two. So, two complex fields equal four real fields. Another example is a spin 1/2 Dirac field in the fundamental representation, two. And in this case, what you have to take is you have to take a Dirac field that is a component. In fact, there are two different kind of Dirac particles labeled by I equal 1, 2. And each of those is a Dirac field. So each of these fields carries a Dirac index. In fact, you have psi I. There's in fact a collection of psi I alpha, where alpha are the Dirac indices. Okay. And so the action you can write for those particles is, for instance, an SU2 invariant action for the scalar field. The root is just d4x, so 1/2 d mu phi bar times d mu phi plus m squared over 2 phi bar phi plus g over 8 phi by phi square, where phi bar is just the conjugate. So phi bar is conjugate of phi 1, conjugate of phi 2. So this is a complex conjugate. And you have a global gauge invariance. I'm sorry, a global invariance in this symmetry. If you change phi into g phi and phi bar into phi bar g dagger. Okay. Same thing for the Dirac field, where the action is simply d4x psi bar I d slash minus m psi, with, as usual, also psi bar is psi bar 1, psi bar 2, and this is the ordinary Dirac bar field. Okay. And again, the same, since this is just the law of the psi, is this is how the symmetry group transforms the fields. Yes?
When we write the mass term, for example, we divide by a factor of 2.
No, it's just a normalization. Yeah. Are you?
It's kind of strange compared with the complex scalar field. You don't have that.
You didn't have that when you?
Complex scalar field.
Well, I think it, you can do that. No, I'm not. Well, it's just a question of normalization. If you, yes. I won't need that in any case, so. Okay. I'm used to write it in this way, but okay. Oh, I see what you mean. It depends how you write the propagator. Okay, it's just a question of normalization. Okay. So now you have those currents, and the currents are, if you apply Vick's theorem, Noether theorem, you find that you have G mu A is I over 2 phi bar T A D mu phi minus D mu phi bar T A phi for the scalar field. And for the Dirac field, this is psi bar gamma mu T A psi. Okay, that's just Noether theorem. And you see that you have three currents. And you see, remember, this is a vector of the fundamental normalization. This is an antisymmetric matrix. This is a vector, so this is a covector, so this is a number. Okay. So you have three currents. And you can check using the equation of motion that they are, or not even, that they are conserved. D mu, G mu equals zero. Okay. So this is for the matter, if you want. Matter fields, two simple examples of matter fields. So now we want to introduce a gauge field. It's the analog of the photon for this symmetry. Okay. So the purpose of the gauge field is to introduce the current interaction, exactly like in QED.
lag.
Okay, but and so we expect that in QED you have only one charge, so you have one current G mu, and so you introduce G mu, and you introduce some A mu vector potential. So for the SU2 symmetry, we expect that we have three vector potential. Okay. Yes. Pardon?
These Dirac spinners that we have, we wrote psi as a component of psi 1 and psi 2. And there
yes.
are like four component spinners, but they just carry.
So, yes, you have four. You have two four component spinners.
Okay, so that means that they have some kind of SU2 charge or something like this. So
yeah, they carry an SU2 charge. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. You have an SU2 charge. It's not just electromagnetism with one charge, with particles that are either charged plus E or minus E. Yeah, different.
It's a four component spinner which does something in the
fundamental. Pardon?
You're saying it's a four component
spinner? Yes.
And it does something in the fundamental?
No, they are in the fundamental representation of SU2 because SU2 doesn't act on the Dirac indices. You see? When I'm writing this relation, I'm just mixing the group indices 1 and 2. And
so psi has 8 components in total?
Pardon?
Psi has 8 components in total?
So psi, the whole psi has 8 components. Yes, but so, because that's 2 times 4. And if I was dealing with a fundamental representation of SU3, I would have 3 Dirac terms. So again, this is a group. This is Dirac. So Lorentz, if you want. Index of the representation of Dirac. Dirac indices mean representation of Lorentz. And this is an index of the representation of the group. You know, quantum fields must be classified into representation of the symmetry group. So these are the indices of the representation of Lorentz and Poincaré, and this is the representation of the SU2 group. Okay? So we expect to have three vector potential. And well, by analogy with QED, you see that, in fact, we are going to see that since the current, you see, these three currents are proportional to TA if you do the calculation. So they are proportional to the generator of the Lie, of the basis of the Lie algebra. So say if you want, they belongs to the Lie algebra. Okay.
The gamma matrices.
Yes. They are 4x4 matrices. The gamma here are completely different. So now, if you like to be represent this, be careful. You have d4x psi bar alpha I gamma mu alpha beta d mu minus m delta alpha beta psi beta g I'm summing a sum of repeated indices, and I don't pay attention whether the indices are up or down because I'm a bit messy about that. But you see, so you sum over the group indices completely independently of the usual sum over Dirac and Lorentz indices in the Dirac action. So you see. So this model is just two Dirac spinors that are decoupled at that stage. They will be coupled by the gauge field. But at that stage, you have two copies. You know, there are two different fields, and they don't see each other. They don't interact. And each obey its own Dirac equation. They don't mix under the action of the Lorentz symmetry. Okay, so you see that the three conserved currents belongs to the Lie algebra. And therefore, the three vector potential, are labeled by the indices of the algebra. So the three vector potential means you have three real vector potential. Okay. And since it belongs to SU2, we can write this as sketchy notation. We can note, we can say that they belong to a multiplet A mu, which is just that I'm not. So A mu, of course, it will be depends on x. And I'm going to read that A mu A of x TA. So this is an element. So for each x and each mu, this is an element of the Lie algebra. So since TA are just 2x2 Pauli matrices, we can say that A, this A mu, is a 2x2 matrix. You can see that A mu is a 2x2 anti-symmetric matrix, anti-Hermitian, let us say, matrix, which contains the component. And if you write them, this is simply 1/2. A mu 3, A mu 1 minus A mu 2, A mu 1 plus I A mu 2, and minus A mu 3. So this is a compact way to write this three potential. Okay? And since this is a vector potential, this is in fact a connection, and you can write exactly like in QED. Yes?
Should it be Hermitian?
Pardon?
Should it be Hermitian?
No, because I wrote an I. I'm sorry, there is an the TA are. No, the TA are Hermitian, yes, of course. Sorry, that's I. Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes. Okay. And then you can write, of course, A as A mu dx mu, which is a one form with value in SU2. It's a one form with value in SU2. Okay. Okay. So now we are going to follow the logic you are using to construct QED that I hope you have discussed. I mean, to construct covariant derivative.
Construct a field strength, namely F mu nu, which leads to the definition of what is electric and magnetic field, and then to construct an what's called the Young-Mead actions. Which is a generalization of the Maxwell action for QED. Okay. So, to construct the covariant derivative, you need to remember that A mu A lives in the Lie algebra. Okay. And the Lie algebra of SU2 is what is called the adjoint another of the group SU2. So it's another representation, which is of dimension 3 instead of being of dimension 2. And in the adjoint representation, the action of the group is something slightly different. In the adjoint representation, you multiplied an element with the, to the right and to the left by the group element. And so, okay. So if you have an element G in the group SU2 and you represent it by an element R of G in the adjoint representation, okay, so this is the action of G in the adjoint representation. An element of the adjoint representation is given A. So R of G applies to alpha is G times alpha times G minus 1. Okay. And remember, alpha is a 2 by 2 matrix. So you multiply matrix by matrices. Okay. And if you have alpha, which is an element of the Lie algebra, the representation of the element of the algebra applied to another element of the Lie algebra is just I times the commutator of alpha and beta, or the Lie brackets. So that's how the group acts on the elements of the Lie algebra. Okay. Now you need a representation. A representation of the Lie algebra means that you have a vector space and you represent element of the group as matrices, as linear transformation acting on the vectors. Yeah, this is a group. This is a group. And this is a Lie algebra. Yeah, I agree. This is not very big. Okay, this is a group G if you want, and this is a Lie algebra, Germanic G. Okay. So beta belongs also to the Lie algebra. Okay. So the idea to build covariant derivative is that we want to promote the global symmetry group to a local gauge symmetry.
exactly like in QED with U1. And we need to do that because that's the only way to build a consistent quantum theory involving vector field. Otherwise, there are problems with unitarity, etc. So it means that we want to now construct a theory which is consistent if when it acts to the fields, for instance, a field phi of x, a local gauge transformation, which will be a g of x times phi of x if x, phi belongs to the fundamental rotation. So for an arbitrary gauge transformation, a symmetry transformation depending on each point of space. See, exactly like you did in for U1 theory, local gauge symmetry. Okay. And for this, we need to construct the concept of covariant derivative, derivatives that are invariant under this local gauge transformation. So this is a local gauge transformation. And the idea with SU2 is to work exactly as was done in U1. Simply forgetting that now you have three generators, so you have three different kinds of gauge transformation. We have three different type of gauge transformation. Okay? And so, for SU2, a local gauge transformation. So now, if I make an infinitesimal gauge transformation, so instead of having g, I write that g of x is 1 plus I alpha of x, where alpha of x is a position-dependent, space-time-dependent element of the algebra. So alpha of x is just alpha a of x times ta, summing. So the tas are the polymatrices, the generator, and these are numbers. So you have three different gauge transformation generators. These are the three kind of infinitesimal gauge transformation. Okay. Then the fields phi, well, let's just take the example of the scalar field, but it will be exactly the same for the Dirac field. Phi of x transform as phi of x plus I over 2. Alpha A, well, let us write it like this. This is I alpha of x times phi of x, or in component, so if you prefer, phi of x, which is a 2x2 vector, plus I alpha A of x times TA phi of x. So TA is a matrix, a constant matrix, phi of x 2x2 matrix, phi of x is a vector, so this is a vector, and you sum over there. So this is an infinitesimal gauge transformation. And so we need to construct. We would like to have a covariant derivative operation that I'm going to call capital d mu, exactly like in QED, such that covariant derivative of phi transforms under a gauge transformation as phi. D mu of phi into g of x times d mu of phi, or if you prefer, for an infinitesimal transformation, d mu of phi transform as d mu of phi plus I alpha of x, which is a matrix, times d mu of phi. Okay. And of course, the ordinary derivative doesn't transform like that because alpha of x depends on x. So as we do in QED, we include a gauge field in the covariant derivative, and we define the action of a gauge transformation of the gauge field, of the vector field, so that it absorbs the term that is not wanted. Okay. So how do we define the gauge transformation? Okay. So for SU2, again, I'm always in SU2, I'm going to define d mu of phi as the ordinary derivative, the space-time derivative of phi, minus I TA, A mu A TA times phi. Or if you prefer, for SU2, you see d mu phi minus I over 2 mu A, and let us write the dependence in space-time to be sure. Remember, TA is one half of sigma A, the Pauli matrix, times phi. And this is a two-vector. This is a 2x2 matrix. This is a number. This is a 2x2 matrix. So this is a vector, an action. So this is the definition of the covariant derivative. And you recognize exactly the same form than SU2 in U1. In U1, simply we had one index, only one A mu, and the generator of the group SU2 is just one. It's a trivial matrix, so you had no matrix. But here you have 2x2 matrix, a vector, and a number. So this is the definition of the covariant derivative. This is a generator. Of the Lie algebra, as written in the acting in the fundamental representation. Okay? So now, this is the definition for the action for the covariant derivative. So that's the definition of the covariant derivative. So now we need, of course, to know how a gauge transformation acts on the gauge field. Okay. And as for QED, for the Maxwell field, we want that under a gauge transformation, a global gauge transformation here, mu of x transforms like this, because A mu belongs to the adjoint representation of the group, and that's the way the group acts on the adjoint representation. But of course, we know that the gauge potential is not invariant. It's transformed in a non-covariant way, because you change the gauge, so you change the gauge potential. And so the important term is this one, plus I, g of x, d mu of the inverse of the matrix. This is how a gauge transformation acts in the gauge field. And you recognize that this term is a generalization of the gauge transformation on the vector potential in QED, because in Maxwell theory, G is just exponential of I times alpha. So this is just the d mu alpha of a gauge transformation. So this is the effect of a gauge transformation on A mu. Okay? And this is the term where simply, since the symmetry groups of symmetry is non-abelian, G doesn't commute with A mu. So we have to take this into account. So this term is just A mu of X for Maxwell theory. And here, those are matrices and they do not commute. Okay? Yes?
So in case of scalar field, we work in the fundamental representation, but why are we
because the gauge field lives in the adjoint representation, because you have three gauge field, because you have three currents, and the currents that I've written here, you obtain them by using Noether theorem. So you use Noether theorem. You know, Noether theorem means that you start from the action, you do some symmetry transformation in the field in one of the possible symmetry transformation, and you see the action of the symmetry transformation of the field, and you get the current. And since the group of symmetry has three independent generators, you may have three, you may use the, you know, apply the Vick theorem for three kinds of transformation. So you get three currents. And so to any infinitesimal transformation is associated a current. The currents are labeled by the generator of the Lie algebra of the group. So they live, they are elements of the adjoint representation by definition. It's not a choice. They must live in the Lie algebra of the group. By definition, by construction.
SU3 symmetry would have eight.
So SU3 will have eight current. Yeah, it does have eight current. In QCD, there are eight different currents. Okay. Yes. So the number of currents is equal to the dimension of the group, not to the dimension of the representation we act on. Yes. So that's important. Or SU3 will have eight currents. Okay. So of course, this is a shorthand notation for the three currents. And this is for a global gauge transformation. Oh, you can write this as, in fact, G times A mu plus I d mu, if you want, times g minus 1, of course, in a short notation. And for an infinitesimal transformation, where g is equal to 1 plus I times a small generator, then the transformation is A mu of x transform into A mu of x plus d mu of alpha of x, where d mu of alpha of x is the ordinary derivative acting on the field alpha minus I times the commutator of A mu with A, with A. Okay, so this is how an infinitesimal gauge transformation changes the field, the gauge potential. And this is the definition of the covariant derivative when it acts on a field that belongs to the fundamental representation. So this definition here, let's see, is the definition of the covariant derivative acting in the fundamental representation. Okay. While this is the covariant derivative acting in the adjoint representation. And remember, this, I said I can write this as A. So you can rewrite this by saying that d mu acting on some field in the fundamental representation is just the ordinary derivative minus I times A, which is an element of the adjoint representation acting on phi, F, fundamental. Okay, because the action, this is an element of the Lie algebra, and when acting on an element of the fundamental representation, it's just multiplication of a vector by a matrix. While d mu on some field acting in the adjoint representation is the ordinary derivative minus I times the action of an element of the algebra onto an element of the fundamental of the adjoint representation, which is the algebra itself, so it's a commutator. A mu alpha adjoint. Okay. So in fact, it's just. Pardon? There should be, oh yes. Thank you. So in fact, it's the same definition. Simply, you have to take into account how the action, how the Lie algebra, elements of the Lie algebra act in the representation. In fact, it's mathematically, it's the same definition.
I'm sorry, one more question.
Yes?
When you get into this last box that you have on this blackboard, you say that it's an
infinitesimal
transformation because we expanded G in terms of alpha, right?
Yes, I am just writing G equal I 1 plus I alpha plus smaller terms, and I keep just the term linear in phi. So infinitesimal transformation means that alpha is small. So this is a global gauge transformation with any possible G. And this is the action when G is just 1 plus I alpha plus smaller terms. And once you have this definition, you can, you know, exponentiate it, and at least if the group is simply connected. No, if connected, you get everything. Okay, so this is in fact the same definition. This is a general definition of covariant derivative. Okay, so you see that using the covariant derivative mixes the ordinary derivative and the action of the gauge field, of the vector field. And you can check that. The covariant derivative satisfies this property. So with this definition, the covariant derivative is covariant. Which is why it was built for. Okay. Okay, so now once we have this covariant derivative, we can build the analog of a field strength. Namely an electromagnetic, the analog of an electromagnetic tensor. Okay. In the usual way. The field strength is defined as the commutator of two covariant derivatives. So remember, the covariant derivative is an act on the field. So you can act two covariant derivatives, and you take its, you can take the, its commutator. And if you take its commutator of two covariant derivatives, the ordinary derivative commutes, so there will be no terms involving two, or in fact, one covariant derivative acting on the field. And you end up with something of the form. That's just a calculation. You get the ordinary derivative d mu acting on the gauge field A nu minus d nu acting on the mu component of the gauge field, A mu. And you get a new term which comes from the fact that the A mu are matrices now. So they do not necessarily commute. And so there is, inside here, you get an I times the commutator of A mu and A nu. This is nu because SU2 is non-abelian. It's not commutative. So this term is absent in Maxwell's theory. You get only this usual term. This term appears. And remember that the A mu are elements of the Lie algebra. So the commutator are elements of the Lie algebra. So in fact, this belongs to the Lie algebra. This is an element of the Lie algebra. So in fact, this is a matrix, 2x2 matrix for SU2. And you, if you want to decompose it into its component, this will be F mu nu A times TA, where the TA are the generators of the Lie algebra, namely the Pauli matrices. So you have in fact, so this is an element of the Lie algebra, and this is a real field. Real field strength. So since you have three different currents, you have three different vector potentials, you have three field strengths, three independent field strengths. Okay? And if you want to write this in terms of components, A goes from 1, 2, to 3. You have, in terms of component, F mu nu A of X is just d mu A nu A minus d nu A mu A. That's what you expect from a U1 gauge theory. And then you have a term that contains the commutator, and the commutator, when expressed in term, involves the structure function. So it's plus FABC A mu, and then I just have to take care of the order. That's A mu B A nu C, where these are the structure constant. And remember, for SU2, this is just the antisymmetric tensor. Okay. So you see that now the field strength is non-linear in the gauge potential. It contains new terms. And if you want to interpret F mu nu A as the usual interpretation in terms of an electric potential, EA, and the magnetic potential, BA. So now you have three different of electric fields and three different magnetic fields. Then the expression between, and if you want to write A mu A in terms of vector potential a potential and a vector potential. So this is a number and this is a vector in space. That's the ordinary Coulomb potential and that's the ordinary vector potential. Then if you apply that, for instance, you have that E1 is dt A1 minus the gradient of V1. That's what you get from Maxwell's theory. But then you get a term which is V2 A3 minus V3 times A2. So you have nonlinear terms involving the potential and the vector potential of the two other components. And the same for B1. The electric field is the rod vector of A1. That's the usual terms, plus the vector products of A2 and A3. So you have a nonlinear terms. Okay. Which are not present in the okay. And of course, since the covariant derivatives are covariant, the gauge, the field strength is also covariant. So it transforms covariantly under gauge transformation. Yes?
In order to derive that form with X mu nu,
yes?
You have to assume the way the Korean derivative acts on in the fundamental representation or the adjoint representation.
This form turns out to be universal. So, as it is defined, A mu belongs to the adjoint representation, so F mu nu belongs to the adjoint representation. Yes?
No, I'm saying like when you actually take the commutator, you assume how.
It's a commutator, yes?
You assume how B mu acts on the fundamental representation.
Yeah, so this formula leaves. This definition is in the fundamental notation because I took the covariant derivative. Yes, I took the action of the covariant derivative. I don't think it makes any difference at the end because at the end you get this formula where the commutator is the. So if you take this object and define its action in another representation, you will get
the representation of these terms, which belong to the adjoint representation, to the Lie algebra in the representation. So in fact, this definition is made in the Lie algebra, and then when you see how it acts in any on any field.
So in that case, F mu should be different, right? The
possibly. Okay. At that stage, I just hear what I've wrote is valid in the adjoint representation. So F mu nu is an element of the Lie algebra. Okay? But you are right, in fact. After that, you must see how it acts in different. But it will act as a given representation of the Lie algebra. Yes. Okay.
When,
yes?
When you say that
the pure
term transform covariantly and.
That's what I was going to explain. F mu nu, F mu nu transforms covariantly. It was built for that. Which means that in this case, if you make a gauge transformation, F mu nu, remember F mu nu of x behave like g of x times f mu nu of x times g minus 1 of x. Remember, it belongs to the adjoint representation. So this is the way the gauge group SU2 acts in the adjoint representation. So that's for a global gauge transformation. And for infinitesimal gauge transformation, as we wrote already, f mu nu of x transform as f mu nu of x minus I times the commutator of f mu nu of x with the generator of the infinitesimal gauge transformation. And remember, this is a 2x2 matrix, this is a 2x2 matrix, this is a 2x2 matrix. Okay. Okay, so F mu nu transform covariantly, that's the main property. Of course, F mu nu is minus F nu mu, simply because it's an anticommutator. So it has all the properties. Okay. So, in this mathematical presentation, I've just, showed you how you can, for non-abelian gauge field, reproduce the construction that is usually done to introduce the Maxwell theory. And now, of course, since we have now covariant derivatives that involves the gauge potential, and we have defined an action, how gauge transformation acts in the gauge potential, basically, if we change the ordinary derivative by covariant derivative, we'll have built a theory with a gauge fields, which is invariant under local gauge transformation. Okay? Exactly like for U1. Okay. So first, of course, now we can build the Young-Mills action for the gauge field, which is going to be the analog of the Maxwell action for your U1 gauge field, the ordinary Maxwell theory. Okay. And so we're going to find some action, Young-Mills action, for the gauge potential,
A mu. Well, you know that the Maxwell action is defined as d4x integral over spacetime of the square of the stress energy tensor, the field strength tensor, the electromagnetic tensor. But now remember that F mu nu is an element of the Lie algebra. So it's a matrix. It's a 2x2 matrix. Remember that F mu nu is just F mu nu A TA of X, where TA are the generators. TA is 1/2 sigma A, where the sigma A are the polymatrices. So the product of this is a matrix. So natural choice is to take the trace of this matrix. OK? And with this choice of action, and here I've introduced an analog of the charge. I'm going to G, which is G is an analog of it's a charge. It's the analog of E squared in QED. Okay, this is an action. It involves derivatives, spatial and time derivatives of the gauge potential as Maxwell theory.
Which metric did you use to build this trace?
Yes, here I take as a trace the trace of TATB. So here I take the trace in the Lie algebra. Okay? So if you know a bit of mass of group theory, you may say, okay, but if the group is not. It's not simple, you may have different traits. But for SU2, that's fine. For SU2, there is only one trace. Pardon? Why, it's a property of SUN groups. Ah, okay. I think it's because it's just a simple group. Okay. So trace means that you take the trace of products of T and TB. And trace of TATB is just with the SU2 group. Remember, it's 1/4 of trace of polymatrices. Polymatrices anti-commutes, therefore the trace. And finally, you get that this is 1/2 of delta AB, which are the results of properties from the polymatrices. Okay, the fact that you have a 1/2 is related to the theory of Casimir invariant of SU2 group. So there is some properties of group theory. Okay. And therefore, this means that this Young-Mill action, in fact, it means that you have minus 1 over 2g squared, integral d4x. And you can write f mu nu a, f mu nu a. The indices going up and down for the Lorentz indices is done by the usual
transformation in according to the matrix. Having A and B matrices is just by a delta AB. So it's just having indices, group indices, going up and down is just the same. So I can just, perhaps I should, yeah, let me write this. And then you have the trace of TA, TB, which is 1/2 of delta AB. So this is a 1/4. So in terms of component, this is the action. Okay. And this is the Young-Mead action. Okay. And of course, the properties of this Young-Mead action are what we expect. The Young-Mead action is invariant of EMU is invariant under local gauge transformation. Simply because S Young-Mead of A, mu, if you perform a gauge transformation by a global factor G, becomes, we have seen S Young-Mead of G times A mu times G minus 1, namely minus 1 over 2 by this. It's a bit, well, this coupling constant is, of course, not an element of the group, if we want to go. The coupling constant. Of the Young-Mead theory. It will be the charge of the particles. Okay. And so this is 1/2 G squared Young-Mead. Integral trace. We have seen that F mu transform like that. So you have a trace of G F mu nu G minus 1 G F mu nu G. And by cyclic permutation of the trace, this is A mu. Okay, this is 1. So just by cyclic. Permutation. So we have a classical theory, which is, if you want, this is classical theory. So we have a classical theory, which is gauge invariant. Yes.
Shouldn't we use the whole transformation properties of A?
Pardon? Yes, this is transformation from A.
Yes. When you plug it into there, why does the second term appear?
That's because when you start from this and from the definition of F mu nu, which is in the blackboard upstairs, you can check that F mu nu transform covariantly. That's what I wrote here.
Okay, but then
this term disappear, and hence, the action is completely invariant.
Okay, but then it would be like S, there are like S and mu of A mu prime, right?
Yes, this is A mu prime, if you want. If I make a gauge transformation that transforms A mu into A mu prime equal G times A mu. I'm sorry. What did I wrote this? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. Yes. Sorry. You are right, perfectly. I am completely sorry. Yes. This is the definition, plus I d mu g mu prime. Yeah. I'm very sorry. This was a stupid typo. OK? That's what it means. For the classical gauge series to be invariant. So it means that if you make a local gauge transformation, the electric and magnetic field will transform only as a something global. And therefore, well, the physics doesn't depend on physics. Is gauge invariant. Okay. But now, of course, since F mu nu contains nonlinear terms that involve the commutator, it means that, in fact, the theory is much, much more complicated than Maxwell's theory. Okay, formally, everything can be written in the same form, but for instance, the Lagrangian density contains term nonlinear in the gauge potential. And if you want to work just a little bit, you can see that if you want the Lagrangian density, L, namely the term inside the action, in term of your gauge field, you get something which is minus 1 over 4 g squared times d mu a nu a minus d nu a mu a squared. This is the usual Maxwell theory terms. But then you get plus 1/2 epsilon ABC d mu a nu a minus d nu a mu a times a mu b times a nu c. This is a new term that comes from the fact that you have a structure constant. And then you have yet another terms that comes from the fact that you have kind of the products of the two commutators, which is which involves a mu a nu b a mu a nu b minus a mu a nu b a mu b a nu a. D'accord? So this is comes from the fact of the structure constant, and this is comes from the fact that you have two structure constant, and basically from the fact that so you have f a b c is epsilon a b c for SU2. And the products of two structure constants, FEAB, FECD, is just delta AC, delta BD, minus delta AD, delta BC. Okay? For SU2. Okay, for another gauge groups, like for SU3, it will be more complicated. Okay. And well, tomorrow we are going to discuss how you quantize this theory, at least in perturbation theory. But from this term, and this term, you immediately see that the physics will be more complicated. Yes?
Does this already include the JMU, AMU terms?
G mu?
The current term, you have it, but you have the JMU, AMU term.
What do you mean by G mu, mu?
Is it a vacuum?
The?
Is this in a vacuum or is there a source?
No, no, it's just a Lagrangian density.
This is just the dynamics of the field, right? There's no current coupling yet with the potential.
No, I have not coupled anything yet. It's just the field in itself. It's a classical action. Up to now, I have constructed the classical field theory of non-abelian gauge field.
Yeah, so I'm saying like in QED, we have a term F mu, F mu, F mu, and we have J mu, A mu term, right?
So G mu.
J mu, or the coupling of the potential to the current to the sources.
Ah, okay. I have not written that yet because I've not introduced matter.
Yeah,
I've not introduced matter, yes. That's what I was going to do during the last 5 minutes. Huh? So. So I'm going to do this only for the Dirac field. So this is a pure Young-Mills theory. And now, if we are interested, of course, we must consider its coupling to matter. And I'm going to do this only for the Dirac field, but that's the same because I'm coupling to matter in the case of the Dirac field. Well, for the Dirac field, as we have seen, the action for the Fermi field, psi dot bar, for Dirac, was just integral over d4x, psi bar, I, d slash minus m, psi. And remember, psi is a two-vector because it lives in the fundamental representation, Dirac field fundamental representation. So now, if we want that this action to be invariant under global, well, I'm sorry, local gauge transformation. So if psi of x gets into g of x times psi of x, well, this is an element of SU2, and this is an element of the fundamental representation. So this is a two vector, this is a 2x2 matrix. Well, what we have to do is to replace this by d slash. And then we know that since d slash transforms covariantly, as an element of the adjoint representation, it absorbs the g and the g minus one that are here. So this action is invariant under local gauge transformation, just by construction of. And in terms of components, remember that the covariant derivative that I wrote here is the ordinary derivative minus A mu times the field. In terms of component, it means that this writes as, so the Lagrangian density, if you want, is, so remember, psi carries group indices and Dirac indices. The ordinary derivative is just I gamma mu alpha beta. Delta IG d mu. This is the ordinary, this is a Dirac D slash times identity matrix for the group. Minus, and now I have the term I minus I A mu that comes from the gauge coupling, which is A mu. So I get an A mu A of X. Then I have TA, which is an 1/2 of sigma A IG. Remember, this is a Pauli matrix. This is a TA. Minus M. Oh, and there is a gamma mu. So this is in front of gamma mu alpha beta. Then I get a minus M, and then I have a delta IG delta alpha beta times psi beta I of X. So you get the ordinary coupling of A mu with the current of the Dirac field, but you know, dressed with the sigma R, because now the generator of the adjoint representations of the Pauli matrices, because we have three different currents. Okay. And, okay, I'm almost done. It's the same thing for the, if you had a scalar field, a spin zero field, then you have to replace ordinary derivative by covariant derivative. But, and I'm going to discuss just what we are going to do tomorrow. You see that you have this coupling constant G here, and that's it is the only parameter free we have, because we have only one trace. So G is a charge of the elementary particle. And you see that, imagine that you redefine A. If you redefine A into some G discharge, Young-Mills, times some A tilde, then N divorce, well, the action density for Young-Mills is L Young-Mills contains a d a tilde term like this, which is the ordinary Maxwell theory. I am not writing any Lorentz indices and group indices and symmetry. Then you have a term of order g Young-Mills, a term that involves d a tilde times a tilde and some a tilde. Okay, and then you have a term of Young-Mills squared that involves 4 tilde, 4a, with a lot of tensor, and that comes from the structure, the group structure, and the Lorentz invariant structure. So that's for Young-Mills. And L, the L for Dirac contains the ordinary psi bar d slash minus m psi, and then it contains a term with g Young-Mills times a term which contains an a tilde, a psi bar, and a psi. Okay, that's, and so you see that g Young-Mills is the charge of the Dirac particle. So g Young-Mills is a charge of the Dirac field. But it is also the charge of the gauge vector boson here and here.
And in fact, basically, so if you try to find what are the Feynman diagrams that comes out from such a kind of action, so you have an ordinary propagator for the fermions. You have an ordinary propagator for the gauge field that looks like Maxwell. Simply, it carries some indices. But you have the ordinary current interaction for the fermions with the G. Young-Mills term. But you have, in some sense, interaction vertices for the gauge field with three gauge field and the derivative, and with four derivatives, four interactions. So you have now the gauge field carry charges, so they interact. Gauge field carry charges, so they interact. And the dynamics of Young-Mills theory is very complicated and non-trivial and very interesting because it's a non-linear dynamics. It's just not just plain waves like Maxwell theory in the vacuum. Okay, and the fact that gauge field carry charges and therefore interacts can be seen, let me finish by that. If you compute what are the conserved currents for the Dirac fields now coupled to a gauge field in the SU2 theory, you find that this is the usual psi bar gamma mu Ta psi. That's what I wrote at the beginning of the lecture. It's still there. But because of the coupling, you have an additional term, which is 1 over G Young-Mills squared times epsilon ABC FB mu nu A nu C. So you see that there is a term that involves the gauge bosons, involves the structure constant. So it's not present for Maxwell theory because the structure constant of Maxwell theory is zero because it's an abelian gauge series. And it shows that, you know, it shows that since the current has a contribution coming from the gauge boson, it means that the gauge boson carry charges. And this current is conserved, d mu, g mu is zero, by cancellation between the currents carried by the fermions and the current carried by the boson. So the fermions and the boson can exchange charges. Okay. And they can exchange charges because there are three different kinds of charges. So the fermions can come with one charge in and come out with another kind of charge and exchange some charge with the bosons. Okay. So, thank you. Yes?
How did you get the second term?
We just compute. You apply. Now, we have this theory with this and this, and you apply Noether's theorem. So you can forget about the fermion. You see that even the pure Young-Mills, it's invariant. It has a global invariance under gauge transformations. So you take local gauge transformation and you make them global. So
the first term corresponds to global gauge transformation, but the whole of it corresponds to...
No, this term corresponds also to global gauge transformation because one special case of local gauge transformation is a global gauge transformation. See? And so you may apply Noether's theorem to this transformation.
How is it different from the
How do we?
The current root of it is J A mu psi by gamma mu T A psi.
This one?
Yeah.
Here I applied Noether's theorem to the global gauge invariance, to the global symmetry invariance of Dirac fermions, non-interacting with gauge field. If you now consider their interaction with gauge field, the form of the current, the form of the contribution for the fermions is not changed, but there is a new contribution coming from the gauge bosons that comes from applying Vick's Noether theorem to this. Why did I say Noether theorem? It's Noether. She was German, so she's Noether. Okay, so we apply Noether theorem to this action. You turn the crank and you get up, you end up with this term. And since the now the two fields interact, these terms cannot be conserved separately from this term, because it's only the total theory which is invariant. Yes?
This current is gauge covariant, right?
Yes.
So it can't be physical. It's not physical, is it?
No, I think it's gauge.
Because that last term will change, right? Is there a gauge restriction?
I think it's globally conserved. I have to check, but I think, you know, the non-abelian gauge theories, you still have particles that carry charges. So you still have a global currents, like in QED. In QED, you have a global currents. You have electric currents. Otherwise, you wouldn't have any lamp.
But I think the point is that the vector potential doesn't transform as a tensor, it transforms as a
I think this transforms as an element of the Lie algebra, but under global transformation, I think.
Maybe if you write an integral and then you can do some integration by parts or something, but if the AMU itself or the AMU, the last term, the current, this transforms into homogeneous, right?
No, this transforms, this will contain the DMU, AMU, but I think if you use the equation of motion, then it becomes something global. When you look at local gauge transformation, the action for any, the quantity you study must transform in a covariant way for any configuration of the field. See? But now, when you start to look at physical observable, like global currents, you have to apply them to physical configuration, namely for classical theory, solution of the equation of motion. And I think, but I have to check, but I think, I'm pretty sure, that when you apply the equation of motion, this is a globally conserved current.
So when you say conserved, what exactly do you mean?
I mean that d mu, as a usual definition, I mean just that d mu, d mu, g mu equals zero.
It can be conserved in gauge covariant. So just because it's conserved doesn't mean it's physical, right? Like you can compute a charge which will be independent of time, but the charge will depend on the gauge, I think.
Well, but you have to use the covariant derivative there, right? The gauge covariant divergence is still partial. I think that's the problem because the gauge covariant divergence actually gives you the extra term that cancels the sort of term.
Okay, I'm not. I think this is valid if you apply the Vick, because now if you take an ordinary derivative, this will not be covariant. It will contain a term including the gauge field. This too, but I would expect that they cancel because of the equation of motion. But I'm not 100% sure, but. But I'm just making the reasoning like exactly, for the Maxwell theory for QED, there is an electron and a charge current that is conserved. If you have an experiment and you set electron in or positron, you send some charge in your system, the charge gets out.
But
So you have a conserved charge that is physical. And here, it should be the same, except that the gauge boson also carry charge. But if you take an initial state with a given charge, it should come out with a charge which is also, well, except for the problem of confinement, which means that in fact you cannot really, you have only neutral charge states that you can build. But if you forget about the problem of confinement, you are just thinking about it as a classical field theory, there must be a conserved current. Because there is a global symmetry that's still there. Yes?
So what Kibbe is saying in the end is we have three conserved charges.
Yes.
You don't necessarily know which charges they are because that's fairly arbitrary, like based on like which choice of the A you take. But what you can say is that like if I do like an actual computation, I can just take the base of three.
Yes.
And then
yes. Yes. Yes, you have of course three charges, but the three of them must be conserved.
And if I just change base, that's the same thing as like taking a linear combination of these.
Yes. Yeah, if you make a global, you know, homogeneous gauge transformation, these three currents must transform as a corresponding representation, which is in this case is the adjoint representation.
Yeah, because it's the same one as the
yes. So of course the definition of the currents depends on the choice of base, since you have three electric and magnetic fields, so you have to choose which one you call one, two, three, and you can take linear combination of them. That's the choice of base.